This is the Jacob Sermon Show.
Here's Sermon, claps his hands from the right half, looks to his left, lobs it up to the end zone. Robinson up in the air and makes the grab in the end zone at the W. Sermon claps his hands, spins out to the left and dumps it off just in time. Great play. Stewart at the 40, breaks the tackle at the 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, into the end zone. Darius Stewart.
Presented by Paul Dovenbarger, Shelter Insurance.
Welcome in to the Jacob Sermon Show as we start this thing off here on a Monday, 6 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Interesting weekend. We're going to get into all of it today. We'll talk a lot of Bears with Jacob. Crazy Broncos game, 70-20, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you believe 50-point loss there?
That's crazy.
Just absolutely. In the NFL, too. You don't see lopsided scores like that in the NFL very often.
No, I think they were one field goal away from setting the record.
Yeah, and Mike McDaniel, I was like, just go for it, man. Make it hurt. You know, at this point, just do it. But McDaniel does the honorable thing and says, no, we're just going to kneel it. What would you have done in that situation? You would be the guy. Would you be the guy that's like, let's do the right thing here.
I'd probably do the right thing.
Yeah.
Depends. If I had some vendetta, maybe I'd rub it in a little bit, but I don't think when you're getting paid that much and you're putting up those numbers, I think you just take the knee and feel good about it.
You know, McDaniel was a guy that wasn't interviewed by the Broncos, and it's his home area. You know, he loved the Broncos. He was a ball boy for him and everything. And then you had Vic Fangio on that team as the defensive coordinator. Bradley Chubb's out there. So there were some Broncos ties. Yeah, maybe they did their work scoring 70 points. That was enough.
Yeah, I'm sure that heals a little bit of the tough feelings.
Yeah, so we'll get into all of that. The Colorado Buffaloes had a rough go, too, against the Oregon Ducks. There's some interesting conversations surrounding that side of things. So it was a weird weekend. As for you guys, you go to Idaho State, and, I mean, this was kind of a back-and-forth affair. It was a really fun football game overall. But in the end, it just felt like, Jacob, maybe a couple of key penalties just kept keeping drives going for Idaho State, which ultimately led to them getting the win. But you guys were down 21-7 at one point, came all the way back, scored back-to-back touchdowns, made this thing a great game. First initial thoughts kind of on how that one unfolded for you over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, there's always a lot of learning lessons to come from victories and losses. In this case, I think the most evident thing that jumps out to me is the Bears beating the Bears. You know, we're self-inflicted penalties, pre-snap penalties, post-snap penalties, things that can be easily avoided that either prolongs their drives, helps field positioning, mistakes that are easily controlled need to be avoided, need to be cleaned up.
How do you fix that? I mean, and what is that? Is that young guys, or is it just kind of guys getting too eager out there? Because we heard toward the end of that broadcast, too, it felt like there was going to be some stops. They'd be up against a third and somewhat long or third and short or whatever, and then defensive line would jump off sides. We heard that a lot in the broadcast. I know Matt Gaetor was talking about that. What is that? Is that just flat out youth, inexperience, or guys just really eager to want to make some kind of a play?
You know, I'm sure it's a combination of both. You know, I don't like to speak too much on the defense because, there's always things to clean up there. But on the same side, there's a lot of things the offense can clean up. I think, you know, guys will want to make plays. And I think the discipline and simply the execution is where it's lacked. It's not a lack of scheme. It's not a lack of talent. I think we played that game 10 times. We're competitive in every single one of them. And there's a lot of differences that could be easily made. But as far as the execution goes, critical down distances, catching certain balls, finishing through certain lines, holding your water in certain critical third downs, these all add up over a game, and all of a sudden you stack a couple critical mistakes at critical times. Good teams will take advantage of those.
Tell me about, like, when you get penalties like that, because you always want, okay, there's the penalty there. Oh, and then it happened again. Oh, and then it happened again. Mentally, does that just creep into your brain so much that it's almost like you can't think like you normally do because now you're thinking about making a mistake, but then you make that same mistake? I mean, we've seen that before. It does happen sometimes. But what is going through a football player's head at that point in time?
Yeah, you know, I'm in a unique position because I can't really be afforded that thought process because my span is so much broader than you know, I don't want to say defensive linemen aren't, they don't have a lot of things to think about, but their job is isolated to usually one or two tasks per play, per situation. You know, if it's a contain down, if it's a, you know, get your gap, if it's an edge rushing, there's a lot of different things that they can do, but in any given play, there's a job and they have to execute. And so it can be, I mean, you know, you want to do it so badly that you want to get a head start, you want to get a jump, you're tired in a drive. There's a lot of different ways that you can mentally break down. But me personally, I try my best not to let that ever get to that point, just because I have to keep, you know, I like to be one step ahead of where we were the previous play and to allow myself to be able to react, not have to overthink every single play in the moment.
Yeah, and then I think I heard Matt Gaider on the call to Matt Gaider and Blake Olson on the broadcast on KFK. Matt said it was probably going to be a long week of practice when it comes to penalties like that. You know, guys getting pushed. What do you think on that? So, like, what does that mean? Does that mean extra reps? Does that mean extra conditioning? Things like that. What are coaches typically doing when, as you said, it's the old shooting yourself in the foot philosophy? Well, when you hear that happens time and time again in a game like that, what does the next week of practice look like? Is it just a little extra and everything, or what?
That's a great question. I think we're going to find out this week. I mean, we have a new coaching staff, so obviously there's a lot of different philosophies on how to handle that. I do think there's areas of importance and kind of needed to be highlighted within our game plan and with our personal execution that obviously will be an emphasis this week for sure.
I'll be curious to see kind of how that goes throughout the course of the week. Texture coming in from the Bama Bear. What was it like seeing this the run game explode, too, this weekend? You had two studs. Darius Stewart had 125 yards and a touchdown. David Afari, another nice game for him. He had 108 yards and a touchdown as well. Obviously, you look at that and go, okay, that is going to really help us down the road, too, because when you start presenting that you have a couple of stud running backs that can be lethal, that should open up everything else, like we're already kind of starting to see.
Yeah. I mean, I thought we'd had a good game on offense overall. We had over 400 yards total offense.
Yeah.
Over 200 passing, over 200 rushing, multiple rushing touchdowns, a missed throwing touchdown opportunity, missed field goal. There's points still on the board, you know, and there are more points to be had in red zone penalties that push us out of the field goal range, or you know, play calling that is emphasized towards, all right, we have to make up points right now, rather than, you know, if it's a tighter game, we might play more conservatively in some, you know, areas of the field. So I think our offense, I mean, I think we should be encouraged with especially the O-line play, you know, establishing himself in the run game. That'll continue opening up a lot of different holes in the defenses as we kind of proceed.
It already does feel like this offense, though, is moving the ball much better than it was a season ago. I mean, you had 223 yards in this game, but as you said when we were talking off air, it felt like there was even more. There was just a few more things maybe that could happen. You're putting up some decent numbers to start this season out and to start Big Sky Conference play. It does feel like it's clicking quicker on the offensive side than it is the defensive side under this new coaching staff.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think I have to really commend our offensive coordinator, Blair Peterson. Mm. He does a phenomenal job of preparing us, getting good game plans together, putting playmakers in the positions to make plays. And then our defenses, you know, there's a lot of good offenses in this Big Sky. We faced some really quality offenses early in the season. So as we continue to kind of find our identity there, I'm confident they're going to continue, you know, improving and coming along.
When you're down 21-7 and then you come back and you tie that game, doesn't that do something to you mentally? Now, I know you didn't achieve the goal of getting the win, but when you see something like that happen and you go, okay, we know we can do it, we can put together quick drives, that's got to be a big confidence booster for you guys heading up against Weber State this weekend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it should be confidence building for the entire team. You know, we get the ball at a half, score, defense gets a great stop, score again. You know, it just shows how quickly the momentum, the points, the swing can happen in a game. And so, at the very least, it kind of shows you, hey, listen, man, we're never out of this thing. We strain to the very end, and good things will happen.
Another texter says, is there kind of a mentality right now with you guys where it's like a we're so close kind of thing? Like, it's, you know, we hear that in football, too, where we're this close, there's an opportunity there. Is that kind of how it feels right now with everybody in that locker room?
Absolutely. You know, it's hard to say. You can't ever point out one specific play in a game, but you can. You can show a cultivated effort that says, listen, we're this close. We execute this play. We finish this one. I make a better throw in a situation, you know, or a better decision-making. There's a lot of different ways that you can chalk it up. But all the ingredients are there. We just got to, you know, piece them together finally.
Is that the testament of being able to come back too? And we go back to that a little bit. Is that something where you're looking at your coaching staff where they're giving you this confidence too? Or what is that? Because there's something there that I caught Saturday that maybe has been missing from this program over the last couple of years. There was more of a, hey, we're not going to hang our head. We're not going to quit. We're not going to go down 31-7 here. We're going to come back and we're going to make this a football game. I don't know that that happens a lot the last 3-4 years. So talk to us a little bit about that mindset.
You know, I would love to give the coaches credit for that, but I think that comes directly from the players.
Okay.
I think we have great leadership on this team that holds a standard. And it starts with me. It starts with Alec Pell. It starts with Napke. It starts with the defensive line, the offensive line. There are a lot of guys on this team that step up in critical moments. But listen, man, we have a choice. We have a decision to make. You can execute one play at a time and continue to stand in this moment and strain, or we can kind of mentally tap out. And I'm proud of the way that this team, in every single game we've played in, has continued to strain and continue to fight.
What have you learned about this team so far? First game in the Big Sky, going up against Idaho State. You had your non-conference schedule. It, to me personally, before you answer that, it does seem like every week you're seeing just a little bit of growth in certain areas. What have you learned about this football team?
I've learned there's a lot of players that have been given opportunities and they're making the most of it. I think there's guys that will continue to thrive under these opportunities that they've been presented and really kind of fully gain the confidence that they need and deserve to continue to execute at their highest level.
Yeah, and we'll see if that can start to take another step forward coming up this weekend at home against Weber State. And Weber State's interesting. We were talking a little off the air. They're not the team that they were over the last couple of years. They go up against Montana State. They lose that game 40-0. So we'll see what kind of opportunity that presents and take a look at Weber State here in just a moment. 18 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, it's the Jacob Sermon Show presented by Paul Dovenbarger at Shelter Insurance. And you're listening to Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Hear Preps Talk and Coach Speak with Coach Bruce Dick, the fourth winningest coach in Colorado boys basketball history. Weekdays from 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Matt Gaeter, color commentator for UNC Bears football and former UNC offensive lineman. You're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
I just think it's interesting when we get into football season, every single weekend has its own set of unique storylines. You know, last week we had some of the big ones in the state with the Rocky Mountain Showdown. There was a lot of fallout from that. This week, it's like the Broncos get blown out, almost give up the record for the most points in a game. So that was crazy. Every single week, though, this is why football, Jacob, like, I always joke about this. Who needs subscriptions to all these different TV networks like Hulu and all that stuff when you have football? It's like the storyline that just keeps giving.
Absolutely.
It's nuts, man.
It's insane. There's just so many connections and possibilities and outcomes and upsets that are, you know, potential at any time. It never gets old.
Well, and you can see a team in the first 3 weeks, whatever, be this team, and then 4 weeks later, they're a completely different team. And sometimes they can be better or worse. Sometimes they stay the same. But the story's always kind of changing, and I know that's what you guys are looking to do coming up this weekend against Weber State.
Absolutely.
Tell us about this team. They're a hard one for me to figure out right now. They start off, they get two wins, and then they go up against Utah. They kind of made it closer than you'd think. Utah pulls away 31-7, and then they go up against Montana State over the weekend and they lose 40-0. So what do you know about Weber State, at least on this point, and from your standpoint looking at the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, there's a lot I'm trying to figure out as well. You know, there's an identity to this team that you know, I have yet to discover. You know, they're a historically great team.
Yeah,
they have
sure.
Coaching. They're going to have good players, but they're not unbeatable. Obviously, no team in this conference is. You know, this is a highly competitive league, and so from an offensive standpoint, kind of dissecting their defense. I'll finish up my film study tonight, kind of getting the base downs, first and second down, and overarching. I won't get to the red zone and third downs until probably tomorrow, but they're gonna have good skill positions. Their line's gonna be strong. I think our running game has stepped up tremendously, and that'll be huge in this game. They're gonna want to play a lot of man coverage, stack the box, try to stop that. They feel confident in their DBs. So winning one-on-one matchups outside, protecting, giving me time to kind of isolate matchups and throw some accurate balls, I think will be an integral part of this game plan.
You were telling us a little bit about, they have a pretty darn good linebacker too. Mm-hmm. That's one guy. Talk to us a little bit about him, and then kind of how you approach a stud player like that.
Yeah, Winston Reed, number six. He's a dog. He's a hell of a player. You know, we have to respect players like that, but also we have to trust, you know, our assets, our linemen, our running backs, our receivers. They're all capable of making plays. So obviously, you identify a threat like that. And respect them, but you don't necessarily change your entire game plan or the way you approach or play a game just due to one player.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to kind of look at is when you do get those stud players, I mean, are you trying to go away from them or it's more mindset of, no, we're going to run our stuff. We're just going to have to at least be aware of his presence out on the field.
Yeah, oftentimes you're aware. Some game plans, you know, if you have a top tier edge rusher or a stud lineman, some of your protections might slide his way to add an extra hat for him, or, you know, if he's an apex defender, you might flip your runs and run opposite from him just to give your, you know, pulling the guard or your apex lineman a better chance to initiate contact, to get the run started off. I'm curious to see what our game plan is as far as what type of, not respect, but what type of altercations we might have to handle athletes like him. But also, you know, we have a system that we run, and that's a sound system regardless of who we're playing.
I know you guys are looking to get that first win of the season. Is there a sense of urgency right now? I mean, I know every week is, you all consider it like a must win. You want to win every single weekend. But when you're looking at this, you know, again dropping a close one to Idaho State, do you look at this weekend and go, man, we are feeling the pressure. We want to get something going here this weekend.
You know, I think some people feel that way. I should feel that way, but I also feel just incredibly blessed to have every game and have every moment. And so that doesn't necessarily make me any less inclined to prepare or to feel the want and desire and need to win. But every week I'm confident in my preparation. I'm confident in my ability to lay it all out there and execute at a high level. And there's some things that are out of my control, and I kind of lift those up to God and trust that his plan is bigger than whatever my vision is. And so that kind of gives me a lot of peace in my, you know, constant preparation and kind of my day-to-day, week-to-week, you know, outlook on things.
And that helps you keep that positive mindset, too, because the last thing you want to do is be at each other's throats, you know, when you're so early on in the season. Not that it's good at any point, but you want to be at that point where you're looking at each other, trying to stay positive and get each other where you need to be ultimately.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've struggled with. It's not, you know, I talk about these things as if I have it mastered, and there's, you know, there's a weekly, there's a daily struggle. There'll be calls with my dad, my mom, where I'm asking them, how do I maintain? How do I stay positive? How do I lead when I feel these frustrations, you know? And I think recognizing those struggles that I have and then finding ways to overcome them or give them up to God or talk and vent to people that I trust allows me to best maintain my composure and also to best lead people that are struggling through similar, you know, things.
Do you find that for you, there might be a moment where you're feeling a little bit frustrated with the way things are going, but you have the awareness with yourself to go, okay, I need to step back. And like you said, talk to the people that you trust, talk to those people in your network, in your circle, and then come back. Because you do see other guys, you know, they get frustrated, they let it boil, and then bam, they say something that they're going to regret. They do something that they're going to regret. That's got to be an important thing for a quarterback, for a leader in general, and not just on the football side of things.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that, I mean, football has been the best teacher in my life, just because it forces you into these high stress environments, and adversity hits, you're frustrated, things don't go away. You feel like you're making great plays, and yet the outcome isn't what you anticipate. And so how do I let those outcomes impact my future? And I think I've always tried to be as focused on the input rather than output. What can I do to prepare? What can I do to execute and then lift up whatever outcome is, regardless of good, bad, negative, neutral, whatever that may be, lift it up to God and then just try to, you know, go forward with the best mindset leadership as I can.
Home against Weber State, as we talked a little bit about that, and you're going to be putting the film work in a lot more throughout the early stages of this week, and then you have a bye. I mean, that would be just the perfect scenario, right? Come home against Weber State, get that going, find a way to get the dub, And then you can kind of reset for a bit before you prepare to go up against what looks to be a pretty tough Sac State team.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of preparation that goes into the bye weeks, a lot of recovery, some hard strength training that we have scheduled up. So there's a lot of good things that will come out of that bye week. But obviously all the attention going into this current week takes priority to that right now.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Get you guys back on your home field and see if you can build a little bit off of that quick comeback that you made against Idaho State. See if you guys can get that off to a quicker start there against Weber State coming up this weekend.
Absolutely.
All right, my man. Well, appreciate you coming in as always. We're wishing you the best of luck.
Thanks for having me.
And last thought on the 70-20 thing. Mm. Kind of crazy, right?
It's crazy.
Just, what do you do?
It would be cool if we could do that. Eh?
Yeah, maybe go and drop 70.
Why not?
You know, go for it. And then you get to make that choice of whether you want to go for the record or not.
I'll probably go for the record.
Change the tune. Go for the record. Do it, man. Jacob, my man, you have such an uplifting attitude, a positive attitude, and I think this Bears team really needs that. So we wish you the best of luck this weekend.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, 11:30 the time. Let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
You said it's embarrassing, but this has kind of been a historic game. I mean, it's
like I'm aware.
Third time the team has scored 70 points over 700.
What's the question?
I mean,
what's the question?
How do you feel about it being
I just finished telling you.
Historically embarrassing.
Next question.
Sean Payton, a little salty. I suppose when you lose by 50, you can get that way. Spread was 6.5, by the way. Hope you weren't like Tanner and predicted the Broncos to pull off the dub in that one. 70-20, the Miami Dolphins win. And where do you want to start? You want to start with Sean Payton's comments right there? I mean, there's so much to unpack from this historically bad day that I honestly don't even know where to start. You tell me where to start. The history of what's been going on the last 7 or 8 years, the trading draft picks to try to put Band-Aids over, you know, gigantic gaping wounds, or hiring a coach that was fired a few years ago that had a defense that really wasn't anything to write home about, and then you hire him to come back, and not only are you seeing bad things, but you're seeing historically bad things. Where should we start, Angel? Mike McDaniel not going for history?
We can start there. We can go backwards from Sunday night. I was kind of both for it and against it. For it because, yeah, take it to them, beat the record, blah, blah, blah. But also, I was already feeling bad about 8 minutes left in that game. And it's just, yeah, kick it if not. But as McDaniel said, I think post-game was, you'd rather beat a record on your own than forcing it. So, you know, you'll take 70 points.
Well, I guess you're never really going to score 70-plus points unless you do pour it on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how those other games went back in the day, unless it was like 75-60 or something, and you still had a reason to score points. But I got a lot of respect for Mike McDaniel, more even over the weekend, but I was of the mindset, you know what, we're here, man, make it hurt. Just do it. It's kind of like me rooting for the Rockies to lose 100. It's just so bad. Maybe that'll be the thing that changes it. Go for the record. Score as much as you possibly can.
Well, I think deep down, you know, Mike McDaniel is still that 6-year-old kid that lost his hat at a practice and eventually became the Broncos water boy. So he's, you know, he has a bit of sympathy for you. You can't do that to your hometown team.
What's worse, though? He has sympathy for you, or just go get the record and die? It's almost...
Well, like, do you want to tie a record or do you want to break a
record?
What
was the record?
73. So if they'd have hit the field goal, it would have tied the record. For me, I'm saying, no, let's go for 6 and break this record.
Just do it. Yeah, I honestly didn't. Would I have been upset if Mike McDaniel did that? No.
Would it be different if it was Belichick? And Belichick's
honestly,
over there like, Merrick, kick a field goal.
Honestly, no, I don't think. Because in that moment, it was so god-awful what we were watching that It was the Rockies mentality for me. It was, I want this thing to burn, and I want it to burn down to the ground.
What's that thing in sports? It's like, oh, why are they running up the score? It's like,
I've seen
that.
You
don't tell your backups to not play.
Right, yeah.
They're playing for themselves.
I mean, Tua didn't play any of the fourth quarter, did he?
He played like one or two snaps.
Yeah, I mean, look at these numbers, dude. Look at these numbers, just from individual standpoints. Tua. Did he throw any incomplete passes?
Not in the first half.
23 of 26, 309 yards, four touchdowns. He wasn't sacked at all. Didn't even get a chance to show off his, you know, his ninja skills. Didn't get to show that off. You had two running backs put together basically, well, three running backs, 350 yards of rushing. A-Chain, he's changing his name, I'm hearing. He doesn't want to be A-Chain. He wants to be A-Chain?
A-Chain?
I don't know. I like A-Chain.
I call him A-Train.
He should be that.
Boys.
Yeah, that's what all I was thinking.
He's a rookie.
He had 203 yards and two touchdowns. Raheem Mostert, 13 carries for 82 yards and three touchdowns.
31 years old.
Chris Brooks, 66 yards.
Undrafted
a
guy.
A measly 66 yards. That's all you can do.
But he earned every one of them.
These other guys are out here putting together 200-yard games. 350 yards on the ground. Couldn't tackle anybody. Tackling was just non-existent. Tyreek Hill. I get it. That guy finds ways to get open. Don't help him. Don't just say, hey, I'm going to give you 10 yards. Once you catch it, I'm gonna run at you. No, wide open. I mean, you got to do something. You can't leave a guy like that wide open. What he does with the yak is amazing.
Even I was kind of shocked on that when the camera pans over and it's, oh, Tyreek is... There's no one near him, and for like 20 yards. What happened?
What are you doing? Why are you not guarding him? That's the game stuff. Raheem Mostert also had 60 yards receiving. A-Chain also had 30 yards receiving.
He had a kick return.
And yeah, Marvin Mims.
He's a little standout.
Something. The positive, I think. I think Javonte Williams was still running hard. Oh, that's right. He still only ran it 11 times. Now, I get it. By the time the second half was there, you were down so big that you're taking that away. But
I mean, that when the Dolphins didn't get that fourth and short, I would have ran the ball five times.
And you didn't do anything with it. The Broncos did nothing with that. That's when you knew.
That even I was like, oh, if we don't, like, that was going to come back to hurt them if they didn't. You know, if they scored there, it's a lot closer game. You get the ball to start the second half. It's a whole different thing.
Well, and you had two opportunities, two touchdowns that were essentially called off by the Broncos, and Brandon Johnson was the culprit on both of those situations. One was like an illegal pick play or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was a Cortland Sutton touchdown, and then there was another touchdown that was taken back, and I think it was a legal formation on Brandon Johnson.
It was a legal shift.
Illegal shift. And so you back those out. Does that change the mentality of this game? Probably not, because the defense couldn't do anything against
from
Miami.
From the third play of the game, it's, oh gosh, we're in for it. When Tyreek's running wide open like that, it's mentally, it's awful.
Yeah, this whole thing, this was the worst I've ever seen. And I've seen some stinkers, man. I remember the Broncos-Raiders game years ago. I think Kyle Orton was the quarterback. And they just got annihilated, and I was at that game. I remember how depressing that was. The Christmas game last year was kind of the game, because we kept saying, well, Hackett is, they're competitive in every game, they're close, and maybe they're not that far away. And then it was the Christmas game where against the Rams, where it was like, okay, this isn't going to work. That was 51-14. I was begging for 51-14. Yesterday. That's embarrassing.
Like 50 was going to be it. Like,
they just couldn't. I mean, you couldn't tackle them. And in football, you can't. It's not like basketball where you can just go down and let the shot clock go down to three every time and then fire up a crazy shot if you're up by like 50 with 8 minutes left. Mm-hmm. In football, it's like, okay, we can run the clock down, but then we're going to hand the ball off. We can't ask the guy to just lay down. We can't ask him to jog for yards.
Can't tell your lineman not to block.
You've got to go hard, otherwise that's how you get hurt. So in the sport of football, you can waste the clock as much as you want, but once the ball is snapped, there's no pullback, because that's how you get hurt. So what was Miami supposed to do? I mean, they had to keep running the ball.
White doesn't throw a deep shot, but he's wide open against Patrick Surtain.
You also want to see what you have, because if Tua gets hurt, you want to see what you got in Mike White. I don't football for me in the NFL, because we don't really have run up the score conversations very often, I don't really have a lot of energy on it one way or the other. I didn't when the Patriots had Randy Moss and they were outscoring teams like 56-14. They were smoking teams. I didn't have an issue with that either because you're trying things. It's a tough game. And you want to see maybe you practice a few things in these games because you don't get to practice as physically as you used to back in the day. So, again, I don't have any issues with that. Let me read some text here. Dixon, four key points here. Sean Payton was overrated in Bronco circles because of bad coaching that has been here lately. He's not all that in a bag of chips. Okay. The speed difference was incredible and an indication of not having top-end talent that comes from giving up top-level draft capital. Number three, you think the offense is better, but they only scored 13 points. They're better than they were last year. Maybe not by much, but they're better. They seem to play well in the first half, and then the second half, everything goes away. And I put that on coaching.
Yeah, you're not seeing the major offensive miscues. Like, you're not seeing Russell miss open receivers. You're not seeing guys just not be in the right spot. It's just, I don't know, talent, execution.
Yeah, Cortland Sutton just holds the ball.
And it's not
out
all
here.
One thing, you know.
No.
McGlinchey has struggled. He's great at run blocking, but he can't pass block. And Cortland's great on a 50-50 ball, but maybe he drops it out of bounds or something. Or maybe
has let somebody slap the ball out of his hands and he fumbles it. Another point here, lack of talent and depth still being haunted by Elway mistakes and exaggerated now by what you had to give up for Russell Wilson. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. I mean, you want to go back to the game itself was just a garbage fest, and it's historically bad, and it's depressing me. But you go back the last 7 years, and the problem with the Broncos was that it all started with John Elway's infamous comment, "We're not worried about Plan B, we're worried about Plan A." Well, you got to focus a little bit on Plan B.
Well, I say, you know, it's easy to point to the year after the Super Bowl. Go to that year you won the Super Bowl when Peyton got hurt and Brock Osweiler was the guy. That was it. That was the turning point.
Not making a better push for Brock Osweiler and honestly disrespecting him was where this started. I mean, I want to talk about a lot of things here, but that was where it started. B-Rad says the Broncos traded a first and second round pick for a coach who just got beat by 50 by their former ball boy. I mean, yeah, you can look at it that way. There's a lot of terrible ways to look at it, but yes. And a guy that didn't even get an interview. This is what the Broncos do the opposite of whatever the trend tells you to do. You know, all right, you got Peyton Manning. John Elway's crowning achievement as a VP. You got Peyton Manning. That got you a Super Bowl. Manning attracted free agents and stud players to the Broncos like honey. I mean, like bees to honey. I don't even know if bees like honey. They make honey. Like a bear, like Winnie the Pooh to honey, basically. DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward when he was still at a high level. A lot of Wes Welker coming in at a high level. A lot of good players at high levels. But the problem was, you knew Manning wasn't going to last forever. What are you doing with the quarterback position? What are you going to do when you win a Super Bowl and all of these players are wanting big contracts? Who are you going to pay? Who are the guys you're going to go with here? I still don't disagree with giving Von Miller money at that point. I still, you know, again, this team just got bad in every other area outside of what Von was doing. But it does come down to the Brock Osweiler thing. You look at that first, and that was, Brock was pretty good. I mean, was he great? No, but he was pretty good.
He was the heir apparent.
Yeah.
That's what he was. And he was being groomed.
You liked him. Elway liked him. So he thinks he's going to get a... He doesn't feel great about the fact that he got benched for Peyton, but it's still Peyton at the end of the day. So he's fine, whatever. He's waiting for a call from John Elway. Gary Kubiak wants him. John Elway doesn't, apparently. Brock Osweiler's agent said, dude, sooner or later, we got to go here. So there's a deadline. And if he doesn't call by this deadline, don't answer it. We're going to try something else. Elway waited, and then he didn't call by the deadline. Now, Brock Osweiler even admits that Elway did call, but it was after the deadline, and Brock did not answer the phone. Brock will tell you he regrets that decision, not answering the phone call, but he was going off of the counsel that he received from his agent. And again, keep in mind, Brock's still a relatively young guy in this business, so he's going to lean on the expertise of agents and things like that. So,
and it's, you know, do you want the pressure of being the heir to Peyton Manning, or hey, you can go to Houston and be your own guy?
Yeah, and then go make bank over there. So you missed out on that, and then it was the whole Paxton Lynch, Trevor Siemian situation. You're trying different guys there. But then you keep trying. Then at that point, Elway goes, let's recapture what we did with Peyton Manning. Let's go get Joe Flacco. Let's go get Case Keenum. Let's go get guys and just pay them. At the time, Case Keenum was making pretty good money based on 1 year of work that he showed. So you go do that. I was telling Tanner this morning. We're sitting there. I'm like, I look around in my living room most days. I have a five-year-old that just likes to wreak havoc over the entire house. We have toys everywhere in the living room. Everywhere. If I get up and pick up three toys and put them in the little toy box, it's going to look like I've done nothing. But I'm working. I got up and picked up some toys. It needed to be done. But unless I'm willing to pick up all the toys in the room, or at least 60% of the toys, the living room is still going to look like absolute trash. The Broncos, over the last 7 years, have picked up little toys to clean up the room, but the room is still a disaster.
To add on to that point, what can you do as a front office is teach your coaches and your players to pick up after themselves. Maybe.
Hey, while we're there, we might as well go all in on this analogy.
When you're playing with your toys, when you're done, pick up like five or six of them.
Somebody else do something else.
And then the next week it's, hey, pick up seven or eight of them.
You make a tackle. But the problem is the Broncos kept saying that, let's just keep doing the Peyton Manning thing and then everything else will fix itself. Peyton Mannings are hard to find. And it doesn't really happen that often where a great quarterback goes to another team and is a great quarterback. So what Peyton did was rare. What Tom Brady did with Tampa Bay was rare. What Aaron Rodgers maybe was going to do with the Jets was rare. So they were trying to strike lightning twice, and it didn't
three times
happen. Yeah, four or five, however many times. So instead of saying, okay, you know what? That Case Keenum thing didn't work out. It didn't work out with Joe Flacco. We got Drew Lock. We don't know what we have necessarily, but we did draft him. Let's stay the course there. And I could go on this all day long because, Angel, I could have made a case for the Broncos keeping Nathaniel Hackett last year because he's just a young – I wasn't really for it, but I could have seen why they would have stayed the course because he's a young coach and let's grow with him. But then when you get Russell Wilson and you throw him into the mix, you escalate all the pressure. You increase all the pressure. And now it's like, if you can't win with Russ, then you can't win at all. How are you going to win with Drew Lock?
Well, again, I think it goes back to, why did they hire Hackett? It wasn't to get Russ.
No.
It was to get another guy.
You think it was to get Rodgers, and maybe that was the case. But if it wasn't, then you hired a young coach that was an experiment. At least let him try.
Well, if you weren't going to get Rodgers, then you say, all right, Hackett,
you got Drew Lock. Yes, you got
Figure
Drew Lock.
If you can't. All good.
Yeah. There's no pressure. We're going to rebuild this thing from the ground up, and we still got all those first-round picks and third-round picks that we can use to build around Drew Lock, or maybe a quarterback if it gets really bad.
Tight end still.
Yeah. So instead, then you go and give another draft, first and second or whatever it was, for Sean Payton. You keep trying to build, and you keep trying to hit a home run with the two most important positions in football, quarterback and head coach, while ignoring everything else. Let's read some text before we break. Weld County Swami says, boy, it's sure saying something when we're reminiscing of the Osweiler times. And it's not really reminiscing. It's just that was your plan B, and you screwed it up. Would Brock have worked out? And today, as we sit here on September 25th, 2023, Brock's a good quarterback? I don't know the answer to that.
It's just that is the point where, because you didn't get Brock right, you messed up Siemian and the other guy. You messed up Flacco and Keenum. You messed up Drew Lock and Teddy. And now you're here with Russ.
And
it's,
you can't.
It's a cataclysmic domino effect that has almost destroyed this organization.
This is why Caleb Williams, right? This is why his dad comes out and says, we may not go in the first round if we want. We may not elect for the draft if we think it's looking like we're going to get on a potentially bad team. Because if you're thinking a quarterback is going to come in and save you without fixing everything else, it's typically not going to work. 11:51 the time. Let's jump out, take a quick break. I got a lot of texts I want to get to. Some good stuff. It's Vent Monday here. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0780. 800-400-0043. It's the whole show powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
You want high school football? You've come to the right place. High school football on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
Said it's embarrassing, but this has kind of been a historic game. Third time the team has scored 70 points over 7.
What's the question? What's the question?
How do you feel about it?
I just finished telling you.
Historically embarrassing.
Next question.
Sean Payton a little salty. I suppose when you lose by 50, you can get that way. Spread was 6.5, by the way. Hope you weren't like Tanner and predicted the Broncos to pull off the dub in that one. 70-20, the Miami Dolphins win. And where do you want to start? You want to start with Sean Payton's comments right there? I mean, there's so much to unpack from this historically bad day that I honestly don't even know where to start. You tell me where to start. The history of what's been going on the last 7 or 8 years, the trading draft picks to try to put Band-Aids over, you know, gigantic gaping wounds, or hiring a coach that was fired a few years ago that had a defense that really wasn't anything to write home about, and then you hire him to come back, and not only are you seeing bad things, but you're seeing historically bad things. Where should we start, Angel? Mike McDaniel not going for history?
We can start there. We can go backwards from Sunday night, and I was kind of both for it and against it. Because take it to them, beat the record, blah blah blah. But also, I was already feeling bad about 8 minutes left in that game, and kick it if not. But as McDaniel said, I think post game was you'd rather beat a record on your own than forcing it. You'll take 70 points.
Well, I guess you're never really going to score 70-plus points unless you do pour it on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how those other games went back in the day, unless it was like 75-60 or something, and you still had a reason to score points. But I got a lot of respect for Mike McDaniel, more even over the weekend, but I was of the mindset, you know what, we're here, man, make it hurt. Just do it. It's kind of like me rooting for the Rockies to lose 100. It's just so bad. Maybe that'll be the thing that changes it. Go for the record. Score as much as you possibly can.
Well, I think deep down, you know, Mike McDaniel is still that 6-year-old kid that lost his hat at a practice and eventually became the Broncos water boy. So he's, you know, he has a bit of sympathy for you. You can't do that to your hometown team.
What's worse, though? He has sympathy for you, or just go get the record and die? It's almost...
Well, like, do you want to tie a record or do you want to break a record?
What was the record?
73. So if they'd have hit the field goal, it would have tied the record. For me, I'm saying, no, let's go for 6 and break this
just
record.
Do it. Yeah, I honestly didn't. Would I have been upset if Mike McDaniel did that? No.
Would it be different if it was Belichick? And Belichick's
honestly,
over there like, Merrick, kicked a field goal.
Honestly, no, I don't think. Because in that moment, it was so god-awful what we were watching that... It was the Rockies mentality for me. It was, I want this thing to burn, and I want it to burn down to the ground.
Well, it's that thing in sports. It's like, oh, why are they running up the score? It's like,
I've
you
seen
don't
that.
Tell your backups to not play.
Right, yeah.
They're playing for
I mean,
themselves.
Tua didn't play any of the fourth quarter, did he?
He played like one or two snaps.
Yeah, I mean, look at these numbers, dude. Look at these numbers, just from individual standpoints. Tua, did he throw any incomplete passes?
Not in the first half.
23-26, 309 yards, 4 touchdowns. He wasn't sacked at all. Didn't even get a chance to show off his, you know, his ninja skills. Didn't get to show that off. You had 2 running backs put together basically, well, 3 running backs, 350 yards of rushing. A-Chain, he's changing his name, I'm hearing. He doesn't want to be A-Chain, he wants to be A-Chain?
A-Chain?
I don't know. I like A-Chain.
I call him A-Train.
He should be that.
Boys.
Yeah, that's what all
but
I was thinking.
He's a rookie.
He had 203 yards and 2 touchdowns. Raheem Mostert, 13 carries for 82 yards and three touchdowns.
31 years old.
Chris Brooks, 66 yards.
Undrafted
a
guy.
Measly 66 yards. That's all you can do.
But he earned every one of them.
These other guys are out here putting together 200-yard games. 350 yards on the ground. Couldn't tackle anybody. Tackling was just non-existent. Tyreek Hill. I get it. That guy finds ways to get open. Don't help him. Don't just say, hey, I'm going to give you 10 yards. Once you catch it, I'm gonna run at you. No, wide open. I mean, you got to do something. You can't leave a guy like that wide open. What he does with the yak is amazing.
Even I was kind of shocked on that when the camera pans over and it's, oh, Tyreek is, there's no one near him and for like 20 yards. What happened?
What are you doing? Why are you not guarding him? That's the game stuff. Raheem Mostert also had 60 yards receiving. A-Chain also had 30 yards receiving.
He had a kick return.
And yeah, Marvin Mims.
He's a little standout.
Something. The positive, I think. I think Javonte Williams was still running hard. Oh, that's right. He still only ran it 11 times. Now, I get it. By the time the second half was there, you were down so big that you're taking that away. But
I mean, that when the Dolphins didn't get that fourth and short, I would have ran the ball five times.
And you didn't do anything with it. The Broncos did nothing with that. That's when you knew.
That even I was like, oh, if we don't, like, that was going to come back to hurt them if they didn't, you know, if they scored there, it's a lot closer game. You get the ball to start the second half. It's a whole different thing.
Well, and you had two opportunities, two touchdowns that were essentially called off by the Broncos, and Brandon Johnson was the culprit on both of those situations. One was like an illegal pick play or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was a Cortland Sutton touchdown, and then there was another touchdown that was taken back, and I think it was a legal formation on Brandon Johnson.
It was a legal shift.
Illegal shift. And so you back those out. Does that change the mentality of this game? Probably not, because the defense couldn't do anything against
from
Miami.
From the third play of the game, it's, oh gosh, we're in for it. When Tyreek's running wide open like that, it's mentally, it's awful.
Yeah, this whole thing, this was the worst I've ever seen. And I've seen some stinkers, man. I remember the Broncos-Raiders game years ago. I think Kyle Orton was the quarterback. And they just got annihilated. And I was at that game. I remember how depressing that was. The Christmas game last year was kind of the game, because we kept saying, well, Hackett is, they're competitive in every game. They're close, and maybe they're not that far away. And then it was the Christmas game where against the Rams, where it was like, okay, this isn't going to work. That was 51-14. I would have begged. I was begging for 51-14 yesterday. That's embarrassing.
50 was going to be it. Like,
they just couldn't. I mean, you couldn't tackle them. And in football, you can't. It's not like basketball where you can just go down and let the shot clock go down to three every time and then fire up a crazy shot if you're up by like 50 with 8 minutes left. Mm-hmm. In football, it's like, okay, we can run the clock down, but then we're going to hand the ball off. We can't ask the guy to just lay down. We can't ask him to jog for yards.
Can't tell your lineman not to block.
You've got to go hard, otherwise that's how you get hurt. So in the sport of football, you can waste the clock as much as you want, but once the ball is snapped, there's no pullback, because that's how you get hurt. So what was Miami supposed to do? I mean, they had to keep running the ball.
White doesn't throw a deep shot, but he's wide open against Patrick Surtain.
You also want to see what you have, because if Tua gets hurt, you want to see what you got in Mike White. I don't, football for me in the NFL, because we don't really have run up the score conversations very often, I don't really have a lot of energy on it one way or the other. I didn't when the Patriots had Randy Moss and they were outscoring teams like 56-14. They were smoking teams. I didn't have an issue with that either. Because you're trying things, it's a tough game, and you want to see maybe you practice a few things in these games, because you don't get to practice as physically as you used to back in the day. So again, I don't have any issues with that. Let me read some texts here. Dixon, four key points here. Sean Payton was overrated in Broncos circles because of bad coaching that has been here lately. He's not all that in a bag of chips. Okay, the speed difference was incredible and an indication of not having top-end talent that comes from giving up top-level draft capital. Number three, you think the offense is better, but they only scored 13 points. They're better than they were last year. Maybe not by much, but they're better. They seem to play well in the first half, and then the second half, everything goes away. And I put that on coaching.
Yeah, it's you're not seeing the major offensive miscues. Like, you're not seeing Russell miss open receivers. You're not seeing guys just not be in the right spot. It's just, I don't know, talent, execution.
Yeah, Cortland Sutton just holds the
ball.
And
it's not all
here.
One thing, you know.
No.
McGlinchey has struggled. He's great at run blocking, but he can't pass block. And Cortland's great on a 50-50 ball, but maybe he drops it out of bounds or something. Or maybe
Has let somebody slap the ball out of his hands and he fumbles it. Another point here, lack of talent and depth, still being haunted by Elway mistakes and exaggerated now by what you had to give up for Russell Wilson. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. I mean, you want to go back to the game itself is just a garbage fest and it's historically bad and it's depressing me. But you go back the last 7 years and the problem with the Broncos was that it all started with John Elway's infamous comment, "We're not worried about plan B, we're worried about plan A." Well, you got to focus a little bit on plan B.
Well, I say, you know, it's easy to point to the year after the Super Bowl. Go to that year you won the Super Bowl when Peyton got hurt and Brock Osweiler was the guy. That was it. That was the turning point.
Not making a better push for Brock Osweiler and honestly disrespecting him was where this started. I mean, I want to talk about a lot of things here, but that was where it started. B-Rad says the Broncos traded a first and second round pick for a coach who just got beat by 50 by their former ball boy. I mean, yeah, you can look at it that way. There's a lot of terrible ways to look at it, but yes. And a guy that didn't even get an interview. This is what the Broncos do the opposite of whatever the trend tells you to do. You know, all right, you got Peyton Manning. John Elway's crowning achievement as a VP. You got Peyton Manning. That got you a Super Bowl. Manning attracted free agents and stud players to the Broncos like honey. I mean, like bees to honey. Or I don't even know if bees like honey. They make honey. Like a bear, like Winnie the Pooh to honey, basically. DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward when he was still at a high level. A lot of Wes Welker coming in at a high level. A lot of good players at high levels. But the problem was, you knew Manning wasn't going to last forever. What are you doing with the quarterback position? What are you going to do when you win a Super Bowl and all of these players are wanting big contracts? Who are you going to pay? Who are the guys you're going to go with here? I still don't disagree with giving Von Miller money at that point. I still, you know, again, this team just got bad in every other area outside of what Von was doing. But it does come down to the Brock Osweiler thing. You look at that first, and that was Brock was pretty good. I mean, was he great? No, but he was pretty good.
He was the heir apparent.
Yeah,
that's what he was. And he was being groomed.
You
to
liked
take over.
Him. Elway liked him, so he thinks he's going to get a. He doesn't feel great about the fact that he got benched for Peyton, but it's still Peyton at the end of the day. So he's fine. Whatever. He's waiting for a call from John Elway. Gary Kubiak wants him. John Elway doesn't, apparently. Brock Osweiler's agent said, dude, sooner or later, we got to go here. So there's a deadline. And if he doesn't call by this deadline, don't answer it. We're going to try something else. Elway waited, and then he didn't call by the deadline. Now, Brock Osweiler even admits that Elway did call, but it was after the deadline, and Brock did not answer the phone. Brock will tell you he regrets that decision, not answering the phone call, but he was going off of the counsel that he received from his agent. And again, keep in mind, Brock's still a relatively young guy in this business, so he's going to lean on the expertise of agents and things like that. So,
and it's, you know, do you want the pressure of being the heir to Peyton Manning, or, hey, you can go to Houston and be your own guy?
Yeah, and then go make bank over there. So you missed out on that, and then it was the whole Paxton Lynch, Trevor Siemian situation. You're trying different guys there. But then you keep trying. Then at that point, Elway goes, let's recapture what we did with Peyton Manning. Let's go get Joe Flacco. Let's go get Case Keenum. Let's go get guys and just pay them. At the time, Case Keenum was making pretty good money based on 1 year of work that he showed. So you go do that. I was telling Tanner this morning. We're sitting there. I'm like, I look around in my living room most days. I have a 5-year-old that just likes to wreak havoc over the entire house. We have toys everywhere in the living room. Everywhere. If I get up and pick up 3 toys and put them in the little toy box, it's going to look like I've done nothing. But I'm working. I got up and picked up some toys. It needed to be done. But unless I'm willing to pick up all the toys in the room, or at least 60% of the toys, the living room is still going to look like absolute trash. The Broncos, over the last 7 years, have picked up little toys to clean up the room, but the room is still a disaster.
To add on to that point, what can you do as a front office is teach your coaches and your players to pick up after themselves. Maybe.
Hey, while we're there, we might as well go all in on this analogy.
When you're with your toys, when you're done, pick up like 5 or 6 of them.
Somebody else do something else.
And then the next week it's, hey, pick up 7 or 8 of them.
You make a tackle. But the problem is the Broncos kept saying that, let's just keep doing the Peyton Manning thing and then everything else will fix itself. Peyton Mannings are hard to find. And it doesn't really happen that often where a great quarterback goes to another team and is a great quarterback. So what Peyton did was rare. What Tom Brady did with Tampa Bay was rare. What Aaron Rodgers maybe was going to do with the Jets was rare. So they were trying to strike lightning twice, and it didn't
three times
happen. Yeah, 4 or 5, however many times. So instead of saying, okay, know what? That Case Keenum thing didn't work out. It didn't work out with Joe Flacco. We got Drew Lock. We don't know what we have necessarily, but we did draft him. Let's stay the course there. And I could go on this all day long. Because, Angel, I could have made a case for the Broncos keeping Nathaniel Hackett last year. Because it's just a young... I wasn't really for it, but I could have seen why they would have stayed the course because he's a young coach and let's grow with him. But then when you get Russell Wilson and you throw him into the mix, you escalate all the pressure. You increase all the pressure. And now it's like, if you can't win with Russ, then you can't win at all. How are you going to win with Drew Lock?
Well, again, I think it goes back to, why did they hire Hackett? It wasn't to get Russ.
No.
It was to get another guy.
You think it was to get Rodgers, and maybe that was the case. But if it wasn't, then you hired a young coach that was an experiment. At least let him try.
Well, if you weren't going to get Rodgers, then you say, all right, Hackett,
you got Drew Lock. Yes, you got Drew Lock.
Figure him out. If you can't, all good.
Yeah. There's no pressure. We're going to rebuild this thing from the ground up, and we still got all those first-round picks and third-round picks that we can use to build around Drew Lock, or maybe a quarterback if it gets really bad.
Tight end still.
Yeah, so instead, then you go and give another draft, first and second or whatever it was, for Sean Payton. You keep trying to build, and you keep trying to hit a home run with the two most important positions in football, quarterback and head coach, while ignoring everything else. Let's read some text before we break. Weld County Swami says, boy, it's sure saying something when we're reminiscing of the Osweiler times. And it's not really reminiscing. It's just that was your plan B, and you screwed it up. Would Brock have worked out? And today, as we sit here on September 25th, 2023, Brock's a good quarterback? I don't know the answer to that.
It's just that is the point where, because you didn't get Brock right, you messed up Simeon and the other guy. You messed up Flacco and Keenum. You messed up Drew Lock and Teddy. And now you're here with Russ.
And you can't.
It's a cataclysmic domino effect that has almost destroyed this organization.
This is why Caleb Williams, right? This is why his dad comes out and says, we may not go in the first round if we want. We may not elect for the draft if we think it's looking like we're going to get on a potentially bad team. Because if you're thinking a quarterback is going to come in and save you without fixing everything else, it's typically not going to work. 11:51 the time. Let's jump out, take a quick break. I got a lot of texts I want to get to. Some good stuff. It's Vent Monday here. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. It's the whole show powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
You want high school football? You've come to the right place. High school football on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.